Greetings, and welcome to the Cat Options Reporting Deep Dive San Francisco conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, June 11th, 2019. I would now like to turn the conference over to Shelley Boland. Please go ahead.
Great, thank you. I'm actually going to turn it over to our host here, Brandi Patterson from New York.
Hello. Welcome all to San Francisco today. We're going to be going over the consolidated audit trail for options. We will go over the options timelines, the key changes that were made to the IM spec, different options workflows, and the CAT responsibilities, the differences between 2B and 2D. We'll be going through what flags are needed to link different orders and trades, how you're going to handle responses to auctions. We'll go over where you can find the OSI symbology, registration, make sure you all register on the FINRA CAT website, and FDID. Now, turn it back to Shelley.
Okay. Well, let's start off with the detailed implementation timeline for 2B, which, of course, is the first phase for the options. And the timelines and how we're rolling out the implementation has changed slightly since last November-December timeframe when we had done earlier option sessions with the change in the processor. We are actually incrementally rolling out the validations across next year, which is a change from a Big Bang implementation we had originally gone through. So let's just walk through how these incremental, how the validations will be turned on incrementally. So the first significant date will be the opening of the test environment, and that will be December 16th of this year. So the very first validations that will go in will be the file submission and data integrity validations. So essentially syntax semantics, do you have the right values in the right field? Do we recognize the symbols, the IMIDs, those kinds of things? And that will be in place until the first production date for 2B, which will be May 18th of 2020. So on May 18th, 2020, for 2B, firms will be required to report all events every day for anything that meets the 2B scope, which we're going to talk about in depth a little bit more, what the specific definition of that scope is. So between December and May, when the test environment is open, there is not any mandatory test participation other than you will be required to come into test and show that you can submit and successfully pass all of the validations before you will be entitled to go to production in May. So if you haven't been to test and you haven't shown that you can successfully submit a file, you will not be entitled to production. And so you cannot just go straight to production in May. So it's very important that you ensure that you've come in at least to ensure you can pass all the validations. But starting on May 18th, all data every day, and any rejections that you receive have to be repaired and resubmitted within the time frame T plus 8 a.m. on T plus 3, or you'll have a compliance issue. So then what we're going to do as we move through 2020 is there's the whole life cycle requirements of linking all the events inside a single firm, then linking across firms, and then linking into an exchange. So the next tranche of this will be intra-firm linkage. And just to note that the plan processor will be doing development for both equities and options in parallel. So all option functionality will be available in the test environment at the same time the equities option functionality will be in place as well. So you'll see the next tranche here, which is intra-firm linkage, which is linking inside a single firm, new orders, if you're doing child events or routes or things like that, all have to link inside a single firm. That will actually, that code and validation logic will be in the test environment beginning in April of 2020, which is 1 month before the first prod date for options, but that's because we're doing the equity parallel. Those validations will be turned on in production in August of 2020. So that means starting in August, you're already submitting all your data every day starting in May. In August, in the production environment, we'll turn those validations on. Anything we can't link inside a single firm will be flagged as an unlinked event. And that then, starting in August, has to be repaired and resubmitted by 8 a.m. on T+3. So then the next tranche will be the inter-firm linkages. So firm one goes to firm two, the route has to be linked to the related new order. Those validations will be enabled in test in July of 2020. Again, that's 1 month before even the prod on the intra-firm. And then that will go into production on in December of 2020. So starting December 2020, if you are unlinked against another firm, you'll have until T+3, 8 a.m., to work with the other firm, correct whatever the situation is, and repair the linked event. And then the final tranche of this will be the routes into an exchange. So the route that is submitted to CAT will have to link to the related order in the exchange. That will be enabled in the test environment starting in September of 2020 and will go into production in December of 2020. So by December 2020, full functionality for 2B, and I should have mentioned at the beginning before I started, this is the large firm implementation schedule. So for options, there's large firms and small firms. A pretty simple delineation. Large firm is anything of $500,000 or more in total capital. So if your firm has more than $500,000 or more in total capital, then you're a large firm and you'll be in May. So if we turn to the next slide, talk about the small firm date and then the customer and account in 2D. So for a small firm, less than $500,000 in total capital, you will have until December 2021, and it will essentially be a big bang into production on December of 2021. To note that the test environment and the validations, other than knowing a small firm doesn't have to be in until December 2021, everything between small and large firms is the same. There's no difference in the functionality. So all the functionality that a small firm will need will be there in December 2019. So test as early and as often as a small firm would like. But again, then the full implementation is not until December 2021. And then the 2D scope, which is the more complex piece of it, the complex orders, paired orders, manual orders, all of that. Large firms will have to be in December 2021, and small firms essentially at the same time. Those specs will be out in June of 2020. Then it'll be in the test environment of June of 2021. And then the final implementation, which is the complete game changer on many levels for CAT, is the customer and account information, and that will be fully implemented in July of 2022. As we know, a lot of work needs to be done there, a lot of conversations to have. There's a lot of build on both the firm side and the processor side there. But I'll stop there and see if there are any questions around how any of this is being rolled out incrementally. Okay. So let's dive into the scope definition for 2B and what we've tried to as narrowly as possible define for 2B. Simple electronic orders, excluding paired electronic orders. And so what do we exactly mean by a simple electronic order? And this is very important to hone in on. It's the receipt, the electronic receipt in standard format directly into an OMS EMS. So a fixed message or something in a standard protocol coming directly into the firm's OMS or EMS or other similar system. What it is not is you receive a phone call and you turn around and you type it in, systematize it that way. That would still be considered manual receipt, even though you're electronically capturing it. And the same for a route. To be considered an electronic route, it needs to be routed directly out of your OMS, EMS, directly to another, either industry member or an exchange, in a standard format. So IMs, anything like that, not considered electronic. Anything of that nature would still be considered manual. Any questions on that? And then the next slide, just turning to slide 6 here, for the avoidance of doubt, included in this definition what an electronic paired option order is, because that is not in scope for 2B. That will be a 2D scope item. And that, of course, is you receive the order with both sides, both the buy and the sell. That is then routed as a paired order out. So it's received as a paired and routed as a paired. Okay, so let's move on then to some of the key changes that have been made since the version 2.0 of the spec. The first change here involves the origin code. So originally, the origin code was on all the different option event types in the spec. And we received a lot of questions, a lot of concern about how that was going to map to each of the exchange's own specific values in the exchange origin code. So after much discussion and consideration, and to be more consistent with the equity formats where possible, what we have determined into what we're really trying to achieve here is at the very top level of the life cycle, when the order is first received from a non-CAT reporter, as being able to identify, is this an institutional customer? Is it an individual customer? If it's the firm, is it their market-making account? Is it some other account? So what we did is we eliminated origin code on everything, and instead, on all new order events, which would be an order event not received from another CAT reporter, we switched it out with account holder type, which is what the equity model is as well. So you can see the values here on the screen of what that would look like. Again, only on the top order. This is not being passed between firms. So if firm A gets it, routes to firm B, only firm A is reporting the account holder type. They do not pass it to firm B. Firm B does not report it. The other thing that was added was an affiliate flag to both new orders, and this can be on either an order accept or a new order. So this is even if you got it from another CAT reporter, and we will be also adding this to routes in the next version of the spec, but this allows CAT to identify when you receive a route in order to one of your affiliates. So it could be a CAT reporter, another broker-dealer who's an affiliate, or it could be a non-BD affiliate. And you'll see account holder type, one of the values is foreign, so you can identify when you've received an order from a foreign affiliate, either broker-dealer or non-broker-dealer. And then there was an originator field. I won't get into what that even functioned as, but it's subsumed in the rest of this. So now we had all the information we need that was in that originator field with the changes we've made here. Any questions on any of this or anything around origin code? Okay, so let's move on to the next slide then. And the one thing we did keep on just routes to an exchange, so a firm facing the exchange on their route event, we did keep the exchange origin code. And what this is the exact code that was sent to the exchange. So whatever your exchange is sending it to, whatever their particular values are, that's what you're putting here, just what you transmitted to the exchange. Again, only on exchange-facing routes. And to note, the field is a text value that won't be validated upon ingestion. So we won't be trying to keep up with what each exchange's values are on any given day. There could be a later time where an exchange might be looking at what values were reported to CAT, that CAT on ingest will not be validating to make sure the code you gave us is what's valid on SIBO that day or whatever other exchange. Any questions on that one? And then as we'll see, as we move through some of these workflows, we have a field called Next and Prior Unlinked that allow us to determine when there won't be the presence of a new or a route as we move through some of these 2D scope items. We receive feedback from the industry that firms may not always be able to populate that at the time they initially originate the order or the event that they have to report. So we've added it to the supplement event So if a firm later wants to come back and add it, they can do so on a supplement event. Okay, so I'll stop there, and we're going to dive into the workflows, which hopefully will help illustrate a lot of this and make it, you know, more understandable in what we're achieving here. So I'm going to turn it over and let Brandy kick us off with the 2B reportable electronic workflows.
So anything that is electronic in the system, if it starts with a BD and it's electronically sent to the exchange, that is going to be reportable in 2B. If a customer goes from one BD to another, then to the exchange, that's all reportable in 2B. If a fixed message goes to the floor broker, and then the floor broker to the exchange, all electronical, that is all reportable in 2B. If it's a non-BD customer that sends it to the BD, and then the BD goes to the exchange, that's all reportable in 2B. Anything that is done in the electronic world is all reportable in 2B.
I think just following on the WebEx, I think we can go to slide 11 and now move on to slide 12.
12, yes.
So as Brandy just pointed out, anything that is going pure electronic under those definitions we already talked about reportable. But so what happens is if one firm receives it directly into their system so it's electronic, but then calls it down to a floor broker or manually routes it. As we started rolling this out and in discussions with the industry, it became very clear that there's going to be many instances where there will be one piece that's not going to be reportable for either because it's manual or because it's part of a complex or a paired order later. So what we determined to do is to introduce this concept of a prior or next unlinked because, frankly, many of these orders are sitting in systems where they can be easily or not easily, but they're able to be reported. So what we didn't want to do is go back and say, if there's three firms involved, from firm one all the way to the exchange, if not everything is perfectly electronic, we didn't want to throw out that entire scope because obviously we're, you know, already delayed here. So in trying to work forward in an implementation schedule that would work, we're trying to do is capture the most scope possible as quickly as possible. And where events were readily available in a firm system, we wanted to be able to allow those to come into CAT. But at the same time, not put everyone in a situation where we're creating a bunch of unlinked events that might look like compliance issue where you're, you know, having to grapple with what should I legitimately be repairing, what is just unlinked because the next event is not reportable in 2B. So that's where this prior and next unlinked flags come in. And as we work through these workflows, we can illustrate how and when these are used. But like I said, it's essentially to indicate there was a manual event, either ahead of this or in front of this, or a complex or paired. So if we move on to the next slide, this is just what the actual values, if you look in this spec, are going to look like for these different, there's the next unlinked, prior unlinked. These are on all of the options events. If it is blank, all that means is that the processor will attempt to link the record. So if you have a straight electronic flow, you don't have to do anything here. This field can just be blank. You would only be needing to populate this if the next step or the previous step of something you're reporting would not be there and you would want to indicate that it's unlinked in 2B. Any questions on that one? All right, so maybe let's start walking through some actual flows and illustrate how this plays out. And I'm going to kick it over to Jennifer to get us started.
Thanks, Shelley. So we're going to move to, where are we here, on slide 14. This is intended to demonstrate a very simple scenario where it's the flow life cycle of the order is part manual and part electronic. So here, you're assuming that a non-BD customer is sending, is placing a phone order with a broker-dealer or an IM. It could be one or the other, so it's not in the standard electronic format. And then the broker then routes an electronic order onto the exchange. For 2B, the manual side of it, so normally if the non-BD customer order had come into the BD electronically, the broker-dealer would record the origination of an order for CAT. But because it's done via phone, there's nothing to report on that first side. It's manual. But then the BD, when it routes the order onto the exchange, it would report an electronic route to the exchange to CAT. Because it doesn't have the full life cycle yet, the front end of it, you would have a prior unlinked indicator of manual to show that the beginning was via phone, and then the later flow down, you'd see the electronic route to the exchange. So that's kind of like a simple intro kind of scenario of what you'd see through the life cycle of the order. You'd see the M at the front because it's manual, and then the route to the exchange would be electronic included in the CAT. Any questions on that one so far? The rest of the slides kind of build on this and a bunch of deviations on what happened, so hopefully I'll just kind of reiterate and illustrate some of the nuances of it. So the next slide here, this is very similar, except in the first slide, when the manual order came in, the broker recorded it on a paper ticket and then routed it to the exchange. Here, it's a phone order that comes in, but the BD records it on an order capture system and then electronically routes it to the exchange. Here again, it started out manual coming in, so the prior event would be manual, and then the route to the exchange would be electronically ported to CAT. Any questions on that one? Okay, we will move to the next one. Here, it's kind of flip-flopping the scenario. The order from the customer comes into the BD electronically first, and then the BD calls an order into another broker-dealer. So he's gone electronic to manual. So here, the BD1 would record an original order, a new order event, the creation of the order. And then he, because the next side out is manual, he would put a next unlinked indicator of M because the phone call out to BD2 is manual. So that's that scenario. Any questions? So we will go on then to slide 17, and here it's just to illustrate a little bit of a twist on the scenario. In this particular one, the customer initially provides a verbal phone order to the broker-dealer and follows up with fixed messages. When Shelley had spoke about what the requirements are, it's the original order receipt that's key. So even though there was a fixed message sent by the customer and the broker-dealer, shortly after it originated, when it first started, was a verbal order. So here, this side of it, the original order is not subject to 2B. It doesn't have to be reported now. The simple order being reported onto the exchange does, though, because it is electronic in the scenario. So you'd have the route to the exchange reported to CAT and a prior unlink of M for this scenario, too. Any questions? Okay, we will go on then to the next slide. And this is just showing the flow within a broker-dealer. Shelley was talking before, you know, one of the phases is to link within the broker-dealers, the intra-broker-dealer links. Here it's showing a non-BD customer order coming into the BD sales desk electronically, and then the sales desk routing verbally, so they're verbally communicating an order to their position desk, who's then going to route an order onto the exchange. So in this one, the BD, the sales desk, you're going to be reporting the new option order event because they've received the order electronically. Then the link is going to be broken between the sales desk and the position desk. So you would report a manual unlinked event over when you route it to the position desk. And then from the position desk, they would also have a manual event on their order that they, they would also have a prior unlinked event of M, and then they would route on the, show the report of the electronic route to the exchange. Any questions on that? I feel like I get tongue-tied every time I walk through the flow of it, but thanks. I think the slides are actually really good demonstrations of what it is and illustrate it pretty well. If I get tongue-tied, the pictures help, which are all available online.
That's right.
A good flag for that. The next slide on 19, this is just taking it into some additional, I guess, more varied examples of it. Here you're involving, instead of it being intra-broker-dealer, you're going from BD to BD. So we start out with a non-BD customer sending an electronic order to BD1, and then BD1 sending an electronic order to BD2, who then calls a floor broker. So again, from BD1's perspective, they've got a new order that's electronic that they're going to report, and then they've got the route of the order to BD2 that they're going to report. BD2 will record the receipt of the order from BD1 and electronic and report that to CAT because it's electronic, and then because they're calling a floor broker out, they're going to have a next unleaked event that's manual there. That's that flow. The next one, very similar, except here you've got two manual links in the chain. The original order coming in is electronic, so BD1 records the original, new order event into CAT. Then because it's the BD1 phones the order to BD2.
I think we need to just go back up one slide if you guys don't mind. On the WebEx. There we go.
Oh,
keep
sorry.
Going.
Okay. So the original order to BD1 would be a new option order event for BD1, and then their next unlinked indicator would be M because they phone it over to BD2. BD2 would have a prior unlinked order, so they'd show M for that side of it, and the call into floor broker would be unlinked too. And so because they're both unlinked on both sides, there's no reporting at all. Does that make sense? So I kind of like misdescribed it slightly, but because there's no unlinked, there's no reportable event receiving, coming and going, BD2 doesn't report anything to CAT at all. Does that make sense? Cool. Thanks. Next, we'll move to slide 20. This is trying to take, to go into the complex order scenarios a little bit. There's sort of two sides to the complex orders. So phase 2B, complex orders do not have to be reported into CAT. Whether they're electronic or not, you don't have to report in complex orders. However, if a broker has a complex order that they decide to break into legs and trade the legs out separately as simple orders, the simple orders, because they are simple, do need to be reported to CAT. They're not exempt from phase 2B, so they have to go early. So this scenario here is trying to demonstrate that here a non-BD customer electronically routes a complex order with four legs to a broker-dealer. And then the broker-dealer decides they want to leg it, and so they're sending four separate option orders that make up the complex order to SIBO, so they've basically legged it out. Here, the prior event, even though it's electronic and it was a complex order coming in, the prior unlinked event would be a C because it's a complex order. And then the four legs, because they're all electronically sent into an exchange, have to be reported into CAT. Everybody get that scenario? So it's a complex order, but it's broken up in legs, so you still have to report the legs. One other nuance that has come up in some of these discussions, especially when we're discussing the stock phasing of CAT, which, you know, stock starts in 2A. When you have a complex order that has a stock leg to it, your stock leg is reportable to CAT regardless. There's not an exemption for that. So that's a little nuance to be aware of. So your stock leg of a complex order is going to be reportable in 2A. And there's some nuances to that. We can talk about that, too, if people have some questions, but just so folks are aware.
And we have one scenario in the scenarios document specifically for the stock leg, and we're going to be adding another one in the next version of the scenarios document to show how that stock leg looks.
Cool. So then this next slide is just, again, adding another twist to the scenario to illustrate a little further. Again, here the broker-dealers are legging the complex order in the way they want to execute it, but there's multiple BDs involved. So here you have a non-BD customer routing a complex order into BD1, who then breaks it up and sends four separate legs onto BD2, who then sends the four legs onto an exchange. So from BD1's perspective, the new order event is not reportable because it's a complex order, but the sending out of the four legs, the four separate legs, to the next BD is. So they would report a prior unlinked of C, and then they'd have four options, leg reports for each of the four legs that they're sending in electronically. From BD2's perspective, they've received four legs, and then they're electronically routing four legs, so it's all reportable. They report the receipt of the four legs that they got electronically and the outbound routing to the exchange of the four. So from their perspective, it looks like any other simple order. It's just four of them that are grouped together. Any questions on that one? Okay. So then the next scenario we're going to move to is on slide 22. As Shelley mentioned before, paired orders are not part of 2B. They'll be reportable later in 2D. Paired orders are when you have two electronic orders that are submitted into an exchange for execution. If folks are familiar, like with NYSE's CUBE auction or like the SIBO AIM auctions, or the QCC functionality that the exchanges offer to pair in stock option orders, which has a little bit of wrinkle because there is a stock leg to it. But that's what we're referring to when we're talking about paired orders, when you're coming in for these electronic auctions. So there is a lot of complexity that gets introduced when you add in both the reporting of the paired orders and the whole solicitation process and how the contra side order is gathered. So we've decided, because of the complexity and how to map this all out in CATS, that it's not all going to be reportable initially for 2B. For 2B, in this particular scenario, we're trying to illustrate what would be reportable. So if a BD receives a simple electronic order from a customer and then goes through some sort of solicitation process with another broker dealer, and then receives the contra side order back, and then decides to route in the paired buy and the sell order into the exchange, what would be reported is the receipt of the original simple order from their customer, and that would be a new option order event, the receipt of that. For 2B right now, for the first phase, the solicitation out and the receipt of the order back from the contra side broker dealer is not in scope for 2B, so you don't have to report that. And then you don't have to report the paired orders going into the exchange yet either. So that's what this is demonstrating. BD1 would report a new option order event of this receiving the simple electronic order of 100 contracts, and then their next unlinked indicator would be P to signify that it was part of a paired auction. Some questions we get on this sort of the nuances, and just it's really the mechanics of it. It's not necessarily the reasoning kind of seems quirky sometimes. As y'all are aware, when you send the, or most of you are aware with the auctions, when you send the paired order into the exchanges, there's usually like a 1 second or a brief auction exposure period where other market participants can respond. The other market participants' responses are part of 2B. So they do have to be reported. So it's sort of odd, you know, with the auction you just get part of the picture, but it's just because of the nuances and complexities of the reporting. The contra side paired solicitation and the paired auction or paired orders coming into the exchange are not what's captured initially, but all the responders are coming in for 2B. And things get complicated. The scenarios can get complicated. This is to stress, too, it's just a simple electronic order. If you're using the paired auction responses for a complex order, you'd have another reason why you wouldn't be reporting it, because you have a complex order starting initially, and that's another reason why some things wouldn't be part of 2B and become in a later phase with 2D. Any questions so far? Okay. This next slide 23, just adds one more twist to the scenario, because we like to, you know, walk through every nuance that firms face. There's been a lot of great questions, so this is one that kind of illustrates where it gets a little bit complicated. In this particular one, the original order that is received from the customer is for 100, and the broker-dealer, through the solicitation process, only gets solicitation back for 60 contracts. So they decide they want to submit 60 contracts into the electronic auction, and then just simply route a straight order for 40 contracts to another exchange that's not part of an auction. In this particular scenario, BD1 would record the new order event, so the origination of the 100 contracts from the customer. And they would also report the route of the 40 contracts out to the exchange in this scenario. And that's all they need to report at this phase. They don't have to report the response that they got on the 60 or the route to the exchange of the paired order for 60. They also, because there is something that's showing the daisy chain, at least for the 40, you don't have to put a next, an unlinked event indicator in there, so you don't need to put the fee indicator in here, if that makes some sense, because you're already reporting part of it and we can see part of the daisy chain. Yep. I think we can hand it back to Tommy. That's actually funny.
Sorry,
ready to hand it back.
It's you.
The next, so I'm like, Jay, who's Jay? That's me. I have my initial slide. So the next group that we're going to talk about are just some complex order scenarios, just to illustrate what is not included within the scope of 2B, what we consider to be a complex and the receipt of them. So, and one thing to point out here is that the idea is that we don't want folks to report complex orders into 2B yet. That's the preferred, that you suppress and not report them into CAT. However, if you are unable to suppress the information, then you can put the information into CAT, but there's these additional steps you have to take. You have to populate the handling instructions field to indicate that it's a complex order, and then you would use a prior unlinked or dext unlinked message of a C to indicate a complex order. So then we'll go next to some of these scenarios on slide 25. In this scenario, it's a verbal complex order mix. Here you get a verbal complex order from a customer to the BD, and the customer then follows up with four fixed messages. So somehow the way the BD and the customer operate, they understand the four fixed messages represent the complex order that's come in. And then the BD then routes a complex order onto the exchange. In this particular scenario, we just want to make clear, the original receipt of the order was verbal, and it was a complex, so it's not subject to 2B reporting timeframes at this phase, so that wouldn't be reportable. The fact that you've got four fixed messages, so it looks like four simple orders coming in, doesn't make it reportable, because it is two things here. One, it's verbal, and secondly, it's a complex order, even though it looks like, if you just looked at the four fixed messages separately, it might look like four separate orders. It is indeed a complex order, so it's not reportable in 2B. But the complex order that is sent on to the exchange electronically isn't reportable in 2B either. So in this particular scenario, there's nothing for the broker to report into CAT for these. Nothing would go because there's no origination or route that is reportable in 2B. But if the broker chooses to report, they can, but they would use the handling instruction complex and put the next unlinked flag of C on those, next unlinked flag of C. Any questions on that one?
And maybe just to add in that this voluntary reporting with the CMPX is only for the individual fixed messages. You cannot voluntarily report the complex order itself, because the spec is not structured. We don't have an event type that would allow a complex yet. So we're just talking about these individual legs.
Thanks, Shelley. Mm-hmm. On slide 26, this is just another illustration of it. It's just slightly different. There's no phone order involved in this one, but the customer sends in use an older version of fix and sends in three messages, and there is an understanding in the operation that that is supposed to be a complex order, even though it's coming in on three separate fixed messages for each of the legs. So again, here there is no reporting required, even though it might look like there's three legs here, so it might look like three simple orders. There's no reporting required. And again, similar to the prior example, like Shelley said, the original receipt of the order can be reported if you want with the complex handling and the next unlinked flag of C. I think really the main difference is that it's just it starts out with 6 messages instead of a phone call or IM. And then on slide 27, this is just, again, taking another twist on the scenarios that apply. Here it's a complex order comes into the first BD, who then verbally relays the complex order to BD2 and follows up with 4 fixed messages, and then BD2 then sends a complex order onto the exchange. And this is just trying to demonstrate the chains in between. There is nothing reportable here. It's a complex order through and through all the way, but they BD1 can choose to report the 4 fixed messages being routed if they include the handling instructions, and BD2 can choose to report the receipt of the 4 fixed messages with the complex handling if they choose to. Any questions? Then ideally, once we get to phase 2D, just to confirm, at that point, everything will be included in CAT, and you'd have the whole daisy chain where you can link them all together in the prior and next unlinked fields would drop off, and you'd be able to actually link the orders together. Let's see. This next one on slide 28. Again, this is just one more twist on how the orders are routed here. I always have to look back between the two, but really what differs.
This one is just that it's sort of understood that it's a complex order. There's like standing instructions.
Yeah, and so, thanks, Shelley. This is, again, like the same scenario that we did where the customer and the BD had the standing instructions. Here the BD1 and BD2 have standing instructions. So the route between BD1 and BD2, it looks just like 3 fixed messages, so like 3 simple orders are routed, but they have instructions so that they understand that that is a complex order, so there's no phone call involved. But we recognize that if you have this sort of arrangement that it would be viewed as a complex order and therefore not subject to the 2B reporting timeframe. Any questions on those so far? Okay, now I'll actually hand it back over to Shelley
Great.
To talk about combined orders.
Thanks, Jennifer. So the next section here on combined orders is the one scenario where there is this concept of a representative order, so to speak, in the option space. And this scenario involves where a firm may receive multiple customer orders. Let's call it, say, they receive 3 customer orders for 10 contracts each, and they choose to route a single order into the exchange for 30 contracts. So in CAT, you're going to need to be able to link the 30 contract order from the exchange to a single route message from the broker-dealer. So how the reporting requirements for this, if anyone is familiar with the equity space where there are representative orders, what will happen is the firm will need to report, obviously, each of the 3 customer orders and then create a single representative order. Actually, this is probably best illustrated if we go ahead and move on to slide 30 of how this looks. So each of the single orders gets reported from the customers. Then the firm is going to originate a single 30 contract order that will be routed to the exchange. They will need to mark on the 30 contract order, which is a firm representative order, essentially with a representative indicator of O, meaning this is an options combined order. And then they'll submit the route to the exchange. Then upon getting the fill from the exchange, they're going to turn around and fill each of their individual customer orders. When they do that, there will have to be an order fulfillment report reported for each single order. And on that, those individual fulfillments, a fulfillment link type of O will have to be included in phase 2B. When we move into phase 2D, you will have to provide the specific order IDs on the rep order or the combined order into the exchange. You'll have to put each of those 3 customer order IDs on it in the aggregated order field. And then on the customer order fulfillments, you're going to have to put the order ID of the firm combined order. Just some foreshadowing there, that's 2D. But in 2B, you're only going to have to tell us that this is, in fact, this is a combined order, and these got filled from a combined order. But the linkages won't have to be populated until 2D. Okay, any questions on that one? So do we have any wholesalers here? So I think that we're going to just skip over this whole next section because that this is intended to include some scenarios where a wholesaler is involved and to illustrate what the reporting requirements are when you have multiple PDs involved. But since we don't have any wholesalers here, we can just skip over that. And we're going to then go, if we can go to the other 2B scenarios involving a post and facilitate in response to auction, and Brandy's going to walk through those for us.
All right. So when a non-BD sends a simple electronic order to BD, and then that order is sent to the exchange, and then after the broker follows up and sends another order to execute, those are reportable in 2B. It's not a paired order, the two single orders, those are reportable in 2B. So if we have in 2B, when we have an order that is sent into the cube auction or in...
We might want to move on to slide 39.
Slide 30, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
We send in an auction order to the exchange, so cube, PIM, AIM. When that paired order is sent in, when we have responses to that, the responses are reported in 2B. So if the market making firm that's responding to that, those are reportable in 2B. Any questions on any responses or what's sent?
I need to just note that there's a special handling instruction, auction response, and they'll have to include the actual auction ID, in the name value pair when you're responding back to an auction.
That can be different for each SRO. I know for RS or American Wares, you don't necessarily put an auction ID. So it is going to be individual for each SRO. And on ours, you can respond with a market maker quote. And since we're reporting the market maker quote, or NYSC is, that's not, if you respond with a market maker quote. So when you're reporting, there will be the OSI symbology list, and that can be found on the CAT website, the CAT NMS plan website. So is that up now? What's the bit?
So where we are with this right now is we have circulated a draft of the format to the INTECH Tech Working Group, if anyone's involved in that, to get feedback. And then by July 15th, we'll have incorporated the feedback. The feedback we've gotten has mostly been around complex IDs and flex trade issues. So we're working through that, and then we'll publish the sample list by July 15th so firms will know what the formats will look like.
And then make sure you all register the CAT NMS website. We need everyone registered by June 27th.
Okay. So the next topic we were going to cover, and again, I'll just ask if anyone here is going to be reporting or customer, the receipt of customer orders or originating market maker orders. I think there might be in which an FDID will be reportable in 2B. So we can just step through real quick on the firm designated ID, what this is. So there's been a lot of dialogue and conversation around FDID and how this is really the part of CAT, this is the linkage that is going to eventually, upon implementation of customer and account data, take us to the actual customer information and customer and firm information for the firm's trading accounts. So I think what the easiest way to try to get the concept out for people to understand on the FDID and what's going to be in place in next May is under CAT, under Rule 613, there are two separate and distinct concepts. There's customers and there's trading accounts, two very different things. The customers, as defined in Rule 613, and we'll dive into this a little bit deeper in just another slide, those are represented in the CAT data by a CAT customer ID, or it's referred to as a CCID. The second thing that has to be captured in CAT is the identity of the trading accounts themselves. And in CAT, trading accounts are represented by the firm designated ID. So customers by CCID, trading accounts by FDID. FDID is what was put on the transaction data and has to be reported with the new order events as they come in starting in 2B. And to note, a trading account, FDID, can represent a firm trading account, your market-making account, if it's a, some other type of a prop account you're trading out of, or an actual customer account. And another concept, just to make sure everyone is clear, is that a customer can have more than one trading account, and that a trading account can have more than one customer associated with it. So I can have multiple trading accounts. I can have my an individual account, a joint account, IRA account, cash account, or trading account can have more than one customer. So I have a joint account with my husband. That trading account has two CCIDs associated with it. So hopefully that is clear. So let's move on to the next slide where we talk about who is a customer in CAT. So under 613, again, there's two types of customers under the definition of customer. One is account holder, the actual account holder or beneficial owner of the account. And the second is any person that the BD is authorized to accept trading instructions from, so an authorized trader. So if account has both account holders and separately, like in a managed account scenario, there's also an advisor that has authorized to place instructions for the account, both of those will have CCIDs. So they would be considered two customers on that account. This presentation, this whole FDID presentation, is also posted on CAT NMS, along with a recording of a deep dive we did a month or two back. And in that full presentation posted on CAT NMS, there's also all of the related sites from the different rule sections of the rule, exemptive relief, if anyone wants to look at the actual material. All right, so let's to the next slide, some examples of who would have a CCID. As I was just talking about, it could be an individual investor, it could be an owner of the account. Another example is a financial advisor, so someone who is, the firm is authorized to accept trading instructions from, even though they're not an account holder or beneficial owner. It could be institutions, it can be third-party money managers. This next, the second to last bullet, I think is important with respect to firm accounts in particular. So it would be, as we said, any individual that has trading authorization over the account, but there is a specific carve-out that's important, except if an individual with trading authorization is also employed by the account holder. So think a firm's prop account and all of the traders that trade that prop account. Because the traders are employed by the account holder, which is the firm, each of the individual traders does not have to have their own CCID and appear as authorized traders on the account. Likewise, hedge fund or some other institution whose employees are trading the account and the fund owns the account, those would not have to be separately disclosed as CCIDs. But if the authorized traders are not employed by the account holder, then they do. So hopefully that makes sense. Okay, so let's move on to a little more deep dive into the trading accounts that are represented by an FDID. So industry members are going to have to assign a single FDID to each trading account in the firm that is unique across all vendors that the industry member may use, and it has to be persistent across days. So the objective here, even before we get to customer and account database later, is that in the transaction data using the FDID, you're able to track a single account trading across securities and across time inside a single broker-dealer. So that across time is very important so that you can see what the account is doing over time. And then another issue that came up pretty quickly in industry conversations is if a firm uses multiple vendors to submit order events to CAT, new orders. So a single customer comes in, places different orders. Some of those orders get captured in one OMS. Some of those orders get captured in a different OMS. Those OMSs are reporting on behalf of that industry member to CAT. They have to have the same FDID for that customer account across both of those vendors. So we understand that that may, you know, may be a little challenging on the implementation side, but it's definitely required because when it comes into CAT, it's agnostic to which vendor reported it. It just looks like your firm. So it has to have the same account number, the same FDID. Any questions on that? Okay. The next slide here, we're going to talk about, so I've said trading accounts or FDIDs. Well, of course, there's an exception to every rule. And with this came about, this concept of what we're going to call a relationship ID came through exemptive relief from several years ago when this all was first being, the plan was still under the approval process. So what was brought to the SRO's attention is that there are firms that may, particularly with the institutional side, have large institutional clients that in the front office systems or the front-end systems where the orders are being accepted, the account, the specific account structure is not available to those systems. I think the best way to explain this is just look straight at the, go straight to the example. So let's say a firm has a customer, big fund manager, that may have many sub-accounts that they'll come in later and allocate shares to, but when they first place the order, all the firm knows is I got a customer from Big Fund Manager, or an order from Big Fund Manager. And in their systems, they know Big Fund Manager as BFM1. This is not an account. This is the relationship that they know in their front office. So what the exemptive relief allows is the firm to use as the FDID, in this example, we'll call Big Fund Manager's relationship ID BFM1. One thing to point out where I think sometimes confusion comes in is even though we're allowing BFM1 as a relationship ID, that is still not the same as the customer identifier for Big Fund Manager. Big Fund Manager will still have a CCID that gets reported through the customer account database that would tell us who Big Fund Manager is, what their tax ID is, what their address is, anybody they may have as authorized traders, what their LTID, their LEI, all that gets captured in a customer account. That's not what BFM1 is trying to accomplish here. This is how my trading system knows this. I don't have an account number, but this is how I know Big Fund Manager. And then later in when we get to 2C and 2D where allocations are required to be reported, when Big Fund Manager comes in and says, oh, here are the 73 individual accounts I want you to allocate these shares to, those would be reported as allocations in 2C or for options in 2D. So that's the relationship ID. Okay. The next slide, just I won't belabor this, but there are masking requirements for security reasons. For anything where the FDID is representing the actual account number, it can't be, you cannot literally use the actual customer account number on your transaction report to CAT. You have to mask it or otherwise transform it so that it couldn't, for example, if it were compromised, be used to go affect the transaction. You couldn't walk in, you know, a Charles Schwab office and be able to affect the trade if you were somehow able to get that number. Or in whatever transformation you're using, it wouldn't meet the definition of customer and account under the plan, customer account information under the plan. So those are the sort of two guardrails around it. Otherwise, we're not prescribing any particular masking methodology. I would note, though, that firm proprietary account numbers, it's up to the firm's discretion whether you want to mask it or not. So if you have a market-making account and you don't feel that it's a risk, if your market-making account number were somehow compromised, one could walk in and affect the transaction or whatever, you are not required to. It's your own discretion and your judgment about whether you feel comfortable transmitting your own account numbers. Okay, so the next slide here is just some examples of what an FDID would represent. I think we've hit a lot of these already. The one thing I would point out are average price account numbers. So, for example, in that combined option, the option space, in that combined order scenario where you're sending like a 30 contract order that represents three individual 10 contracts, if you're using, which presumably you would be using some sort of at firm average price account on that order, that SDID has to be the firm's average price account number. Not, you have three separate customer account numbers that are not involved in this 30 contract order. So on the rep or the combined order, it's the firm's average price account is the SDID. All right. Any other questions on that one? All right. And then if we move on to the next slide here, this is just to help further illustrate the concepts by giving a little bit of an understanding of what kind of events these things get reported on. So we have new client orders, we have new firm orders, which are 2A, I'm sorry, 2B, and then could be in 2D as well, and then the sub-account allocations, which are completely separate. So on the new order events, if it's a client order, it's a retail account number or an institutional account number or, as we described in the big fund manager example, relationship ID. If it's a firm order, firm prop order being originated, it's always the firm trading account, the actual account number or the, you have to delineate. It can't be just one big firm identifier. It has to be the specific account number or some transformed version thereof. And then when you get to the sub-account allocations, that will always be the customer's trading account or masked version thereof. There won't be a relationship ID concept when you get to the sub-account allocations. That's where the shares are actually landing at the end of the day. Okay, and the next slide here, I will labor this one. This is just intended to give firms an aid in if you're trying to determine if it's an account number or a relationship ID, asking yourself when the order comes in, how do I know this customer relationship? How is it defined for me in my systems? Is that an account number or a relationship ID? And then depending on your answer, you would see some examples here of what that could actually be. And then, of course, on the allocation, it's always an account number. And then finally, we'll end here today. I would on some how this is going to look in the customer and account data when it comes in, again, to try to just put more context and help people understand here. I would also put a plug in that for the FDID, the full presentation I mentioned earlier, which is posted out on CatNMS, has a variety, I think, five or six scenarios that we walk to in depth that shows what comes in 2AB, what comes in 2CD, how it all gets married. But just look at this slide quickly. If you are looking at when you're going to come in with the actual customer and account data in 2022, when you report the account number, that's going to be an actual account number. You'll have to give the date the account was opened or became effective. If it's a relationship ID, the date the relationship was established. An account type, which was different than the account holder type we talked about earlier in this presentation, individual, institution, et cetera. This would be more, is it a cash account, a margin account, DBPR VP, market making, whatever kind of account we've got there. This is still to be determined. These specs have not been developed yet. And then there will be a customer type required by the rule, still under discussion with the SROs what that is. And then LTIDs would be an example of additional information. But this would be go into the customer and account database, completely separate from the transaction data. So you'll get the FDID on the order data. The transaction data will pick up that FDID. The regulators will go over separately to the customer and account database with the FDID, which will be reported with all of this as well. And that's the key between the two that lets the regulators take the trades and the orders and go extract the actual CCIDs and any other relevant information they need for regulation. So we'll stop with that. I think we're actually over a little bit. I apologize. But we're happy to stay here after anyone wants to come ask questions individually. Happy to entertain that. Otherwise, thank you all very much for your time. For the folks on the phone, thank you very much for your time today. And this presentation and recording will be posted on the website as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.